following is a remastered version of Tribbles in Ecstasy, a production of Holosuite Media. Tune in to our live show every Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
The following live broadcast of Tribbles in Ecstasy may not be suitable for all ages. The views expressed in this show are solely those of the individual providing them and do not represent the opinion of the station, website, or any affiliated partners. Audience discretion is advised. Now give it up for Warp 11.
G'day everyone, this is Woody Valley here, and welcome to another episode of Tribbles and Ecstasy, episode 107. Of course, I'm your host, one of your hosts today, and the other host we have here with us is Dr. Trekkie. How are you going?
Hello, Woody.
Skipper.
Hello, everyone.
And just to help us out with the live stream and recording today, we've got Xander with us.
Heidi, heidi, ho.
And we just picked up a new addition to our list of hosts we have here. We have Midnight Shadow. Welcome.
Hello.
Yes, so let's get into it, guys. It says just not terribly big amount of news, but there is some news that came out of Star Trek Online this week. One is doing the rerun of the fleet projects, the big 200,000 to lithium special projects there. So they're rerunning it for a limited time. What they mean by limited time is about 2 weeks. So starting from the last maintenance back on the 6th of March. So there you have a choice of 14 Starbase, 7 Embassy, 8 Mine, and 8 Spire projects to do that. So, any of you guys got projects you want to get done?
My main fleet has actually got all of them done first time round. So, we won't need any of those ones.
All of these things? Really? That's crazy.
Oh, good for you!
Absolutely useless, but they look nice.
What's your favorite one out of this list? There's got to be one.
Starbase dance floor.
Yes, I like the dance floor.
Well, I already knew that about Xander.
Over at Caspian, we got them all done too, and my favorite is actually the role of Enterprise. Ships across the wall there. I quite like that.
Oh yeah, the pictures.
I was. I remember replying to a Priority One episode about if you want to do up a room like the Enterprise, and I said, well, I don't want to do a room up like an Enterprise, but certainly wouldn't mind doing a wall up with all the these Enterprise bridges along it. So.
Yeah, it's just a shame we can't customize things like that, and even the star bases. Like, if we could actually put in our own images and within the star base settings, that would be fun.
Yeah, we would so be like, you know, we'd have our Batleths and our LARPAs, we'd be battling it out in one of the transporter rooms, probably. We'd totally be battling out who gets to decorate our office, you know. And then, you know, NX-01 Dave would just beam in, change all the plaques and everything, beam out, and we'd be still fighting away. Da 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 da.
the unending PvP match to decorate a room.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's plenty to do there between the different fleet projects. If you really like to have a pot plant in your star base, you go knock yourself out. So, the other big news is the Galaxy bundle is now available for 400 Zen, even though over this weekend till 10 a.m. on Monday Pacific time, it's actually got 20% off, but for the rest of the time it'll be 400 Zen.
Is it not 4,000?
Or 4,000 Zen, sorry.
I was hoping there was a special we didn't hear about yet. 400
Zen. Yeah, 90% off.
That'd be awesome. I'd like to put a petition in. Hi, I spent like 5,000 on all these things. I want to be everything redacted. You know, give me my money back so I can rebuy it.
So for 4,000 Zen, you can get the Exploration Cruiser refit of the Venture class, the Exploration Cruiser retrofit, and the Dreadnought Cruiser. And also there's a bonus in purchasing the bundle that you can get the Galaxy Bridge variants pack for free in the Sea Store. So I must admit, this is quite a bit of a change here. You know, it's, for one, it's like not the usual $50, it's $40. And they also threw in some Galaxy Bridge variants. So I was quite surprised to actually threw something like that in it.
Here's one wondering is, what about the people who have already got all three? Because, like, myself, I got all three of them years ago. So, what happens to people who may have all three but maybe not have the bridge pack? Do they automatically get that free?
That's a good question, because I don't know. I have all three C-Store ones, too, and I already bought the bridge pack back when bridge packs were cool. You know, like way back in the beginning of the game. And yeah, I don't know. That's actually a really good question.
Wouldn't you guys know by now if you got it? Wouldn't you know by now, Midnight Shadow, if you got it for free?
Well, I didn't see anything come up. So I'm just having a look at the bridge packs, because I don't tend to sort of get those. There's come up saying that the Galaxy Bridge Variants 3, there's a 20% off for it, so I could pay 320 Zen for it.
But I'm looking at this and it says, doesn't it say, it just says owners of this bundle.
Yeah, looks like you have to get the bundle, so people who have already paid out a lot more Zen for what was then Cryptic Points back in the day, don't actually get that for free.
Wow.
You have to be satisfied with your fancy starbase.
Yeah. How was it? But the cool thing is, I went and I got rid of all my Galaxy class starships a long time ago because I was. I know.
I did the same.
Yeah, because there were, once the Odyssey came out, it like totally blew the galaxies away, and I'm like, you know, stuff that, right? And then, yeah, because of this, I actually reclaimed all my Galaxy variants, and then I went through, and then I found that if you're going to drop any dime for any of these whatsoever, you might as well just drop it for the Galaxy Dreadnought, because the retrofit and the Dreadnought share the same health, same stats, everything. The only difference between them is the Galaxy Dreadnought, yes, has the Venture skin too also, but it has an extra console slot, I do believe. Don't quote me on that one, but it comes with the hangar. It comes with a hangar. It's the only one out of the Galaxy class series that actually has a hangar. So yeah.
Fleet version.
No, I think all versions come with it.
I don't have the fleet version. I have the regular Galaxy Dreadnought, and it has the Type 8 shuttle in the hangar slot, where the retrofit or the refit, neither one of them have a hangar. So it's only the Dreadnought that actually has the hangar.
that's what I prefer.
That's right, but you need to get the others just to get the console so you can get the, what was it, structural enhancement or something like that?
Yes. You need any what was it?
Antimatter spread.
Antimatter spread.
Pretty much anything you've seen in next gen.
Those are the only two. The antimatter spread.
Cloak.
The cloak comes with the dreadnought, but not the fleet version. So you actually have to have the dreadnought or the defiant, and then that's how you'll get the cloak if you just, you know, skip out and buy the fleet version. But yeah, you get those two consoles. Those are the only two consoles that are in the console set for the dreadnought or any of the galaxies.
But this ship does not come with a surly Admiral Riker. I'm looking at the list and I don't see it.
I'm just glad it doesn't come with a Deanna Troi, because that would just, you know, crash my starship on the first try.
Listeners should also know that if they already have the Federation Dreadnought Cruiser in their list, it will have the slot for your hangar bay, but it won't automatically have the shuttles in there. If you want to get the free set of shuttles, you'd have to discharge the ship and then reclaim it.
Yeah, but once you see the Type 8 shuttle that it comes with, it's a blue Type 8 shuttle, then you're gonna, like, I seen on the forums somebody was raging that how come Cryptic doesn't automatically give us the Type A shuttle right away. Well, okay, if you are like a purist, if you want the galaxy in all its glory and you want the Type A shuttle to go with it, because it's not purple, it's blue, you want that because it's a period piece, then okay, I can see your point. But 90% of probably all the players out there that's going to fly the dreadnought with the hangar are going to quickly kick the Type 8 shuttle and then put in a Delta Flyer or a runabout or something else there in that spot.
Yeah.
So, well, my question is too, would you be more into buying this Galaxy Bundle, or you'd be wanting to more the Science Destroyer that came out a couple of weeks ago?
You mean the one attached to the Tuvok mission, the Series 8.5?
Yeah.
Oh, it was definitely the Galaxy.
That's just the Galaxy as well.
If I didn't own the Galaxy pack, I would drop the coin for the Galaxy complete bundle. Unfortunately, I bought all of them out of the bundle a long time ago. That being said, I did buy the Science Destroyer bundle. I did drop it for the whole bundle. And the last time I was on the show, me and Katsu were to coin a phrase, QQing, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, the midnight there, QQing about the how the science vessels look, that they don't look Starfleet. But now that I bought the actual bundle and I sat there and I was able to play with the starships and the different pieces, I actually made a starship that resembled a Starfleet vessel, and I'm actually quite happy with it.
Cool. Well, for me personally, even though I'm not going to exactly race out by every single ship out there, because I just can't exactly afford it on my budget. I probably would buy the Galaxy bundle more than actually buy the Science Destroyer, mostly because just the look of it all. It to the Galaxy is actually does look like a part of Star Trek, and those Science Destroyers just don't look like something that should be in Star Trek. So, that's my point of view with that. But moving on, we do have one dev block, and even though I think you guys gone off and talked about it a little bit, there talk about the Fleet Galaxy Dreadnought, which has also been just recently been released. Just to give some of the basics about it, it's available on the Tier 4 shipyard. It's got 44,000 hull. Bridge officer stations is Lieutenant Commander, one Lieutenant Tactical, one Lieutenant Commander Engineering, one Commander Engineering, one Lieutenant Science, and one Ensign Universal. console slots is 4 tactical, 4 engineering, 2 science. Turn rate is 6 degrees per second. Can use a source of separation console, but not available on purging the fleet dreadnought. There's also one hangar bay shuttle, one hangar bay, including the Type 8 shuttle. What else is there? Oh, yes, there's a set bonus that also comes with it of having the source of separation and the emitter spread console equipped gives a 2 set bonus of a plus 20 starship hull plating skill, a plus 20 armor reinforcement skill, and a plus 1 turn right bonus. So, and you guys want to continue with. What do you guys think of this fleet Galaxy Dreadnought?
Well, when it came to the big humongous heavy cruisers, the fastest cruiser was the Odyssey. Now, with the updates that they did to the Galaxy Class line, then not only did they up the turn rate to, what was it, instead of point something, it's now, gosh, I can't remember what it was now. I thought it was like one turn rate. What was the turn rate? Anyone remember what the turn rate was?
No offhand.
It was like, I think it was like something point something something, but they actually...
Yeah, it's really low.
Yeah, they upped it to a round number equivalent to the Odyssey, since the Odyssey is like, you know, twice the size of the Galaxy class, so it should at least, the Galaxy class should at least be the same speed, if not even faster. But they upped that, so they also, the one thing that actually kind of makes me kind of happy with this, and I can't wait to try it out after, is the fact that I always hated when the Galaxy first came out with saucer separation, I hated having to come to a full stop, separate, and then fly off. And now, you don't have to worry about that problem, it's going to fly off, the saucer's going to detach at full impulse and reconnect, and it has a more of a tactical flavor in fighting, I guess. That spiral lance of the shotgun.
Yeah, what the hell is that thing, that crazy picture of the spinal phaser lance wide beam? Is that how it really looks?
Yeah.
Oh my god, that thing's crazy.
Basically, when the full ship is intact, okay, both parts of the phaser lance is equipped, is attached, right? Now, when the saucer separates, it has the focal outlet, pretty much the flash barrel of the phaser lance. So it still has a pretty narrow, a normal beam. But actually, no, the beam doesn't work. It's like the extension of the barrel. The beam doesn't work, so it switches to dual cannons that the saucer has at that time. But since the main powerhouse is still equipped to the star drive section, it turns the phaser lance, instead of a high-powered sniper rifle, turns it into a shotgun. So it shoots a wider area.
Pretty crazy.
Yeah, but the only problem is if you look at it cannon-wise, it'd probably still take out half of the lower saucer section.
Yeah, but it's pretty. It's pretty while you're doing it.
Yeah, well, one of the guys on my fleet, he tried that AOE weapon, and he wiped out, like, 4 ships with it. Probably obviously frigate ships, but, yeah, he wiped out 4 ships in one hit. So it is pretty powerful within the PvE side of things. It probably varies when you need it in PvP.
And also... the bridge officer slots, it's also got the Ensign one as a universal slot, because that was part of the upgrade as well, so the fleet one was copied on from that upgrade. So rather than having one Ensign tactical, I think it was, it's now one Ensign universal.
It should have an acting Ensign slot that saves your ship like one every 1,000 times or something.
No, it'd just be a place where you can slot something that will just say, shut up, Wesley.
Yes, that's what you would tell it. It wouldn't tell you that.
You just see from the ship just coming out, shut up, Wesley.
Shut up, Wesley. Make it go.
I think we should lobby Perfect World for an acting ensign's slot. I think that's a valid request. Someone write that down.
And they have to wear the rainbow sweater.
Yes, only the rainbow sweater.
Yes. Oddly enough, I don't mind the rainbow sweater. It's the pants that he wore, that thing that creeps up his back.
Yes.
That's what creeps me out about that uniform.
Yeah. So, anyone else got some input into this?
I think we are ready for the spotlight.
Yep.
Oh, we're spotlighting. Okay. Spotlighting the foundry. That's me, ain't it? Yes. The mission I pulled out of the foundry is called The Intrepid Voyage of Time by a Code Light. It's his first mission he produced from the foundry. It's quite a good story, a bit of an interesting story, and it's very plain and simple in approach as well, where basic outline is you get asked to stop the Borg from doing something nasty in the past, a bit like first contact. So you go off to Vulcan. Vulcans help you go back in time using red matter, which I actually find very strange because I thought the red matter wasn't around anymore. But here it is. And then you go back in time and you meet up with Voyager. meet up with the Voyager with some of the crew there. So you meet Janeway and Paris and Torres and of course Tuvok. Yeah, sorry, I had to clear my throat. And so you go back in time and so I save Voyager from being killed off by the Borg from the future.
So is that what you're trying to save? You're trying to save Voyager and somehow retain the timeline? There's no like historical event you're trying to. Huh.
Yes. Yes. So
this is a side question. You're a foundry expert at this. Isn't it in the EULA that you're not allowed creating existing cast from the game and or from Star Trek itself?
It's very, very questionable. Some people might say yes, some people might say no. Some people try bending the rules and never seem to get persecuted from it, and some people do. So it's not exactly very well policed, but
who complains. If someone complains, yes. It gets removed.
Yeah, okay. So you never know. From me talking about this mission podcast, it might get removed if there's a community manager or dev being removed. So sorry if I do. The characters, the Janeway, even has 7 of 9, all that. It's not exactly an exact representation of that particular actor and stuff like that. You know, it's like near enough, it's close enough, and it's nowhere near from what this actually really looks like. You know, if you see Tuvok and compare him to the Tuvok you get from the latest feature episode series from the anniversary event, it looks nothing like him. So you might be able to get away with it there. But just things with the storyline, they did a direct meeting with the with Janeway and stuff like that, and it never seems to be very strong on reacting to the Prime Directive, you know, because I know Janeway is very strong on keeping with the Prime Directive.
Well, it depends on what day of the week you catch her.
Very true, but
coffee intake.
That's
it. Yeah. So, and there's so I don't think this the author hasn't really seen very much in the way of Voyager in a big way, because just some of the wording that some of the characters say, it's all like, that's not exactly that particular character, you know, like just especially when you talk to 709, it almost sounds like if she was a southerner, basically, you know, it's all like that slang, roll your R's type of talking. So, but other than that, the storyline is pretty good. Yeah, plain and simple. There's not much in the way of combat. There's just some light on ground combat. But all in all, for his first mission, you know, he has done a very good job. So, definitely worth a play. I don't get very much in the way of dilithium from it, though. You only get a little bit over 600, but it might be something you just hang on to and maybe play when you're when the next dilithium bonus weekend comes along. So yeah, so the mission again is called the intrepid voyage of time by Code Light. So, moving on, we do have some Star Trek news here. So, Dr. Trekkie, is that your
I put this stuff in. I thought it'd be interesting to talk about. The first little piece, I don't know if you guys have seen this Wharf of Starfleet parody of the Wolf of Wall Street video.
I'm just watching it now. I am not a merry man.
It is pretty awesome. It is pretty awesome. If you guys haven't seen this, I suggest you go to YouTube and just type in Wharf of Starfleet and look at it. And it's an excellent parody of the Wolf of Wall Street, but starring our favorite Klingon, Wharf. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, I've watched it before the show, and yeah, so I quite enjoyed it myself.
I mean, for a Star Trek parody of a trailer, this one's pretty high quality. I mean, it was really well edited. It wasn't just sort of chopped up bits and pieces of the original trailer. It had the same look and feel, and I thought it was really well done. And I have another little bit of news here. For people that follow the new Starship Foundation, the people that are reconditioning the Enterprise D bridge, there is a new thing happening where they're selling their captain's chair on eBay. And a few of us have gotten this update, people that have donated. It turns out that they're a little bit of a perfectionist, and they're selling off the chair they have now, which is a different one than they wanted to sort of maintain accuracy. So I guess the chair they have now, which you've all seen pictures from conventions, probably Bruce Campbell and others, some Star Trek luminaries sitting in, and pictures of, they're selling that one because it's slightly off from the season 3 through 7 chair that was used in the Next Generation. So right now, if you check on eBay, you can find this thing, and I think the last time I checked, it's about $3,000. So I don't know, Xander, you might have some dollars to shell out. You might need a new office chair. Just a thought.
Sad thing is, I just bought 2 office chairs, so yeah, I can't. I don't have anything in the budget for that. But I don't know.
Not to mention Antita might be very upset about it too.
I'm sure she'd like to sit in as well, so I don't think she'd be that upset.
No.
I must admit this chair has been well sat in with, you know, quite a lot of actors and celebrities in it. You know, there's been plenty of I've followed them on Facebook, and you see a whole heap of photos in there of, you know, I think Stan Lee's even sit in it, so
yep.
So this is one very hot property, so if you risk of being threatened with a divorce with your wife or something like that to get this chair, you know, you're definitely worth
so why are they
worth your getting it.
So it's really odd. So a few of us got this update. And it says that the chair they have was from the tour in 1998, and the arms were in the style of Star Trek Generations, and the rest was quasi-TNG. But they just got blueprints for season three through seven chair, and now they're going to rebuild it in that style. And also, they seem to think that Patrick Stewart, whose representatives said he wouldn't sit in this chair, one of the reasons they thought is because it wasn't the authentic, you know, model. So now they're hoping this is going to encourage him to sit in the chair. Which, who knows, it might work. But I'm glad they're a stickler for authenticity, because of course fans want the authentic thing.
Well, yeah, but the thing is, he found this in a dumpster.
Yeah, he did.
It's already the authentic thing, right? So
it is.
That's it right there. It's like, hi, I just strolled up the Paramount Pictures lot. I found a chair in a dumpster along with the rest of the set. So now, you know, 2 years later, I want to sell the chair because it's not exactly the right chair.
I know.
I should have went to the other dumpster to get the other chair.
But that's, well, see, I don't think the other chair existed. So they have to rebuild the other chair, and it's going to be more at least closer. Authentic is probably not the right word, but it's going to be closer to what we've all seen and loved on The Next Generation. So, it's, you know, I think that's great, and I hope they'll raise a ton of money on the eBay auction. So I think it's very cool.
I just wonder if Captain Gecko will bid on it to go with his office doorbell.
Oh, well, I guess we'll find out.
You can just imagine him. Someone rings his little doorbell to come in. As he spins around.
And then next month, Star Trek subscription prices all raised by $20.
That's a good way to fund it. Crowdsourced chair.
Yep. So looking at the last paragraph of this, it should tell people too is, I'm gonna clear my throat again. Shipping, it doesn't include shipping.
Oh yeah.
So it might cost you a couple of $100 to have it shipped to your place as well. So just a side note there.
Well, I'd love to have those people on the show to explain to us how that whole project is going. But I'm excited to see that chair go for hopefully a large amount. I don't think I'd be paying for it though. Okay, I got one more piece of news.
What chair would you pay for? Honestly, I think season 4 Enterprise. I think I would pay for that chair, or even the Nemesis Captain's chair. I think I like a replica of those.
I mean, I think for comfort, I would like some of the more modern Trek chairs, but I have to say I'd have to have Captain Kirk's chair. I love that chair. That would be great. And you know, what other? Oh, only of course the original Enterprise from TOS.
Okay, fair enough.
I mean, that's the one. If you have like in your office and someone walks in and you spin around, it's really going to have an impact. I don't think the others are really going to do it.
Didn't they make replicas of the original TOS chair?
Yeah, that one I think is a little easier to obtain than these next generation ones. Probably not cheaper, but definitely more available. Okay, I have one more bit of news, and this is mostly for original series fans and for people especially that love City on the Edge of Forever. So some of us know, some of us don't know that the original series teleplay by Harlan Ellison is not what was shot when the episode was created for the original series. So everyone knows the City on the Edge of Forever episode probably by now, where Kirk and crew encounter a time portal that McCoy slips through in his drugged out state and changes history and screws up the timeline, and Kirk and Spock have to go in and rescue him and repair the timeline. And it turns out to do this, they have to be involved in the death of a woman named Edith Keeler, who unfortunately, when she lives, stops the Allies winning World War II. So it's a very famous story. It's a very famous science fiction story. of course, and one of the best Star Trek episodes. But for decades now, the original creator of that story, Harlan Ellison, has been battling Gene Roddenberry, Star Trek, Paramount, for years and years. People might know about his legal history. And it turns out his original screenplay was vastly different. I don't know if you guys know about how different his original screenplay was. Has anyone ever read the original one?
No.
No.
Okay. So it's so crazy different. It actually involves this drug dealer in Starfleet that gets caught, and the Federation decides they're going to execute this person, and to do that, Kirk has to bring this guy to a planet with no life, and actually beam down a firing squad. It's really crazy. And this is one of the reasons why it was rewritten, because it's so not Star Trek. But as the story goes on, it turns out this drug dealer guy is the one that slips into the time portal and changes history. And it doesn't really include sort of all the World War II stuff, but it has some really interesting bits and pieces. If you look in the City of the Edge of Forever Wikipedia entry, you can see. So the only reason I'm bringing all this up is because it turns out IDW is working with Harlan Ellison on making a series of comics. And it was announced, I think, the last few days, they're going to adapt this story into comic. And it's going to be a mini-series. I guess he's intimately involved. So I'm not sure if this is going to sort of mimic the original. It says it's going to be the original teleplay, but I'm not really sure how they're going to slip in all these things about drug dealing and this interesting drug that was part of this adventure. But this has been a long-standing issue in Star Trek, and it's been one of those sore bits. For people that are James Bond fans, it's similar to the whole Thunderball thing, where there was one scriptwriter that was constantly suing the producers and the creators because they thought they owned a piece, and Harlan Ellison has always thought he owned a piece of Star Trek because of the script, and he's never really forgiven Gene Roddenberry for what he says screwing it all up. So it's a fascinating story, and I'm looking forward to the comics. I think it'll be really cool.
Now if Bones went back in time and saved Edith Keeler, and then the Allies didn't win the war, that would explain why the Federation would beam Kirk down with a firing squad to kill this guy.
You sort of got it, Zan. You sort of got it. It's just in this story, there was no. Yeah, I agree. It would have to be some crazy thing to actually have Starfleet have that death penalty, which we all know the only thing that still has a death penalty in Star Trek is visiting Talos IV.
Richard.
Yes.
It sounds like it's a mirror universe story.
And maybe they're going to... See, this is where I'm interested. I'm wondering if they're going to spin it into something else. Because we all know this isn't Star Trek. So how are they going to sort of account for these differences and still sort of retain the original stuff from his script? And if you look at the Wikipedia entry, like in the rewrites and everything, it really is wacky. And there's a lot of things that come out, like at the end, it's so funny, the drug dealer, like when he gets caught, he tries to escape again through the Guardian Forever, and the thing sends him into an exploding supernova to kill him, but it gets worse. And I'll read it. And just before he dies a fiery death, he's pulled back in time and forced to relive his agonizing death over and over for eternity. I mean, how are you going to put that in sort of like a Star Trek twist? So I'm really interested in these comics and what they do. And who knows? And I think that if you look at some of the stories, the covers look like those great Star Trek posters, those retro posters that have been coming out for the last year or so. So hey, it should be fun.
We're not only we're going to send you a firing squad, but we're going to throw you for that big, humongous Cheerio over there and make you relive your death over and over and over and over.
I know, it's crazy. There's some crazy stuff. And the guys that does the title bit on this comic, his name is Juan Oritz. And like I said, he's been doing those awesome covers. And he has a book called Star Trek, The Art of Juan Oritz coming out. And I think all of those original series posters have been released now, or they're getting close to. And they're, I know some particular panelists on this show have purchased some of those, and I think they're very awesome. So even for the art, this comic book should be cool.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose they could base it on the alternate reality in JJ's verse.
Yeah.
And Kirk's gone crazy because of the Khan blood.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Oh, and a sprint on the saucer of the Enterprise.
Mind you, for me, I wouldn't be worried about beaming down to a planet, isolated planet, to put a firing squad at on. I think I'd just go at warp speed and just throw him out there like at warp speed.
It does seem like a lot of effort, and why you would have to find a planet with no life. It's like somehow that little bit snuck into Star Trek 2 with the Genesis torpedo. Like, it makes no sense. Like, why would you have to go to a planet with no life to conduct a firing squad? I guess that's how shameful they are.
It's against the Prime Directive, dammit. You cannot have a firing squad on a planet that has life because you could shoot a mosquito by accident with your phaser, and this mosquito might not have gone to this, dragon. And then if that dragon did not die, then the lower life forms could not evolve so that millions of years later on, we have a new person to play with in the galaxy and eventually raid war with.
That's true.
See, it makes total sense. It's the butterfly.
You could be writing this comic right now, Xander.
Maybe I am.
Maybe you are. Maybe you are. So
yeah,
that's all my news, Woody.
Yeah, it's coming up short on the show here, so we'll leave it at that, or should we quickly find something else to talk about?
I have something else to talk about if we want to extend this lovely conversation.
Yeah, sure, go for it.
Okay, and I'm glad Xander's here because I'm interested in his opinion on this. Don't worry, I'm not asking for a raise. So, a few weeks ago, we talked about this script that was released, at least got some press recently, called Star Trek New Beginnings. And it was a script that was proposed before the JJ verse. And in the show that we talked about it briefly, I said I was going to go into more detail later on, so it seems like a good chance. But I'm intrigued now that we have new panelists and Xander's here, what people think. So just to sort of recap, this script sort of continued right where Enterprise Season 4 ended. So it was trying to get into the Romulan War and have a movie about that. And it introduced a new character called Tiberius Chase. And Tiberius Chase is, of course, an ancestor of our beloved Captain Kirk. And just like Captain Kirk, he is sort of a renegade and goes against rules. And the story for this movie is that the Romulans come to Earth and attack us. And it's not just sort of a random attack, but they're actually trying to start a genocide and kill all the Vulcans in the universe. And they tell Earth they have to give up all the Vulcans or they're going to destroy the planet. And this Tiberius Chase gets the idea to steal the first Warp 5 ship, or the Beyond Warp 5, I can't remember. It's faster than Enterprise. And oh, by the way, Enterprise is vacationing in Risa, so is unable to assist. So he wants to steal the ship, go to Romulus, and cause an attack, and hopefully divert the fleet that is now approaching Earth. So it's a really odd sort of script that was going to be potentially made for the next Star Trek movie before the JJ-verse was made. So it's just kind of crazy. And it is interesting that both Star Trek in 2009, the reboot, also focused on this Romulan-Vulcan story, and oddly enough, ended with genocide of Vulcan. So there's some odd parallels, and it's almost like they Paramount like threw this script at JJ and was like, this is what we got. And he plucked a couple things out of it, even though it's completely different. But I'm really interested in hearing what you guys think about, first, how you would have felt if there was a movie released that tried to continue what happened in Enterprise in that timeline. And what you think this would have done in terms of success for the franchise? Do you think this would have really been the final nail in the coffin? Or do you think this would have maybe started something new if they did it right?
I'm glad JJ's won the pick.
See, finally, a vote for JJ on this panel, which is unusual.
You can't say that. The thing is, I actually really love the JJ movies. I think JJ has redeemed himself. A lot of them, the whole cast, the Federation or the Council, Star Trek Council, redeemed themselves with the second movie. They instilled that yes, James Kirk has always been a soldier. He's never been an explorer. He's always been a soldier, and yes, that's my dog. Right? But they brought him back with a sense of honor, because even though he went on the whole vengeance thing there for like 5 minutes in the movie, then he came back to he's a Starfleet officer first, then a soldier. So they did a good job, I think. Yeah, you know, there's lots of things you nitpick at, but JJ verse, I think I'm glad they went with this route. First off, this Tiberius chase, it would make sense why, you know, Captain Kirk was middle name would be Tiberius if this guy became a hero or whatnot. I don't see where this guy would have been related to Kirk since he's not a Kirk, but
he was supposed to be an ancestor. It said something about I don't know, there was something about Iowa or in it, but he was going to be an ancestor. I have to look for the exact line.
Now, was he an actual Starfleet officer?
He was, and I think he might have been a cadet or like a junior officer. But he was in Starfleet, and he was going to steal this ship, and of course, you know, break through all the red tape and the cowardice of whatever was going on to try to take the ship to Romulus and start an attack.
The actual thing is, like, I think it's a very weak story. You know, why would the Romulans all of a sudden up and say, "Hey, we're gonna expunge the galaxy of Vulcans"? Mind you, as baffling as weird as the first movie was with Nero in the Narada, it made sense. He blames Spock for not helping. Now that's if you read the Countdown comics and get the backstory of it. But even
right.
But even then, the movie, you know, explained a lot of stuff anyway. But yeah, that vengeance on Vulcan, totally. I can totally get if you're like totally psycho and you have a ship from the 24th century, and you're in the 23rd century. Well, why not run a buck for a little bit? But I'm not sure. I don't think I like that script at all.
I mean, this to me feels like they tried to shoehorn something in that would sort of fit between TOS and Enterprise and connect it through this Kirk ancestry. But it is what makes me sad about it more than anything, and one of the reasons I'm really sad that Enterprise didn't go beyond season 4 is that I think the Romulan War is an awesome story, and it really sucks that we've never seen it. We've only seen the remnants of it or the beginnings of it, and it's really unfortunate. So I hope that Netflix campaign works or something, that there's actually a season 5 and beyond, because I think TV is where we definitely want to see it, just like the Dominion War. I think it'd be great.
Yeah, I want to see the Romulan War, and I hope that it does come to fruition. That I think that's what's really lacking in the Star Trek lore, is a lot of people are curious about the Romulan War. But, you know, and a cadet or a junior officer stealing that ship and going off, it seems like a complete ripoff of the actual book. I think it was written by William Shatner, called Best Destinies.
Yeah, that was a great book. He didn't write that. I think, but that was with Captain April and everything, right? That was the real beginning.
Yeah, Captain April was, Captain April just came back from a 5-year mission, and it was Captain Pike, no, it was the first captain of the Enterprise. The Enterprise is back for a refit. It's its first 5-year mission, and then the next captain, Captain Robert April, was taking it out. He was supplying it. Now Kirk and Spock were, you know, were cadets at the time, and then they actually got, I think, some other cadets. They went and stole the Enterprise to stop, I do believe it was an Orion Syndicate pirate, where they were stealing artifacts and then selling them on the black market or something like that. Something like that. I don't remember what it was, because Spock was undercover at the time.
So this book, it's Best Destiny, and it's Diane Carey. I read it so many years ago. It is about Robert April, but it is kind of like a flashback story. And I have this hardcover at home. I'm going to have to look at this again, because I remember really loving it when I read it. And I do remember it tried to fill in some gaps, like you're saying, the bits and pieces that we have not seen, that I kind of was hoping we might see in the JJ verse, but we never really do.
Yeah. We only really see in the JJ verse where a cadet can become a captain in 3 years.
Thinking about that particular script that Dr. Trekkie mentioned, was it's a like, yeah, we could do that, but it's going to cost too much money, so we'll have to simplify it a little bit more and come up with what they got with 2009 Trek, where they blow up Romulus and come back and fill Vulcan and stuff like that. So that's what it sounds like to me anyway.
Yeah, and I also feel like they probably wouldn't have risked that much money on a script that was so steeped in canon, whereas they wanted to sort of take a new direction with the 2009 movie. And Xander, it's funny, because I almost have the reverse opinion of you. Like, I think the 2009 movie was what I had promised for, and then it was sort of smashed with the Into Darkness. So I felt like he still had my attention and hope after the 2009 movie, but it didn't work out after Into Darkness. But I do agree with you that I think it's better for the franchise they went in this direction, because at least there's more eyeballs on it now. And this sort of really steeped in canon and sort of shoehorning it into what was existing, I don't think would have worked. But oh well.
Well, no, my original gripe with the first one is that, yeah, he becomes captain of the Enterprise, you know, without even completing Starfleet Academy, without even earning the rank going through, because, you know, a lot of us know that he served as lieutenant on Farragut and, you know, different other posts that brought him to being
right.
The Enterprise. So they just threw him on there. And then if you follow the rest of it, yeah, the rest of it is really good. But then when they go at the end of the movie and he says, okay, well, we're prepared to save you. And then Nero says no, and he says, okay, let's kill him.
Yeah.
Bang, just like that. You know, Captain Kirk would never have done that. He would have said, okay, well, screw you, and then just turn the starship around and fly off. You know, the black hole's going to kill him either way, so it wouldn't matter. The second movie, if you take away a lot of the plot points, okay, and I mean, the character development was great. I think the characters developed a lot more, except for...
Especially Scotty.
Especially Scotty. Scotty was the heart of the whole movie. Scotty was like Samwise Gamgee to, Kirk's Frodo, I guess, in this one, right? Scotty was the heart. He was the logic, the mind. He was the one that did the right thing. Whereas in the first movie, Scotty was comic relief. You could have did the whole movie without him. Now, Bones, on the other hand, in the first movie was spot on Bones. He was comic relief. He only had one-liners in the whole damn
movie, yeah.
The second one. But if you take away the fact that Star Trek II, Into Darkness, if you take away the fact that it played every single movie, Star Trek 1, Star Trek 2, 3, 4, 5,
yep.
6, all into one movie, because each plot point from the whole original series movies is in this one movie. You take away that, it's actually a good movie.
If you take away all that, it's a good movie.
Yeah. It would have been so much better if they just left Khan out of it and just left it as John Harrison.
I agree. I really wish they did that. That's when I just was groaning in the theater, but we've beaten that to death on the show. I don't know.
just watched it. It just came out on Netflix again, and so me and Antita sat down and watched it. You know, like, it would have been, you know what could have saved the movie, and it would only have taken 10 seconds to do it? Okay, other than the fact, if they just took out the whole con part, him saying con, and just left him as that John whoever, you know, that would have been absolutely fine, right? Absolutely brilliant, you know? But even if you left the con part in, Zim saying he's con, blah, 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 right? If you went through the whole movie, and at the end of the movie, where they're showing the stasis pods in the memorial or whatever, if you've seen, you know, what's his name that said he was con, you know?
Yeah, John Harrison.
Benedict. Yeah.
Oh, Benedict.
Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah, if you seen him there, and then it, and then the camera moved to the one that was next to him, and it was actually Khan in that one, that would have been like, whoa.
I know.
Totally took this guy's identity.
That's what I was hoping. I was hoping they did. They would do something that intelligent, that yeah. They would show it, and like maybe Kirk went in there and pressed some buttons, and he killed Khan instantly, and they're like, oh, well, we woke up this guy, John Harrison. That it was just a completely different person, still connected, but oh well, we don't write these movies.
Yeah,
that's a little bit more science wouldn't go in there.
No, we just write them and then tell all the Trek fans to go get.
It's true. Well, I have the 3D version sitting at home, and I still haven't even cracked open the Blu-ray, so I should do that.
Yeah. Well, it's, we've pretty much hit the hour mark here, so it seems like we've got ourselves a show here. So thanks for joining us for this week, and hopefully we can see you all next week. So bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Drugs and mescaline, hairy mud and heroin, Deanna Troi and Dexatrim, Bones McCoy and opium, Demerol to Polygo, and amphetamines to make it so. Another night of tribbles and ecstasy.
Tonight's broadcast of Tribbles in Ecstasy, a production of Holosuite Media. Tune in to our live show every Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Be sure to check Holosuite Media, iTunes, and Stitcher Satellite Radio for our remastered shows and more. You can follow us on Twitter at Tribbles in XTC, or if you have any questions or comments, please send an email to tribblesinecstasy@gmail.com. Join us next week for another episode of Tribbles in Ecstasy, the only place where Tribbles and Klingons are friends.